May. May is sitting cross-legged on her own bed, her iPad propped on a cushion, headphones in, listening to ZZ Tells It, saying, "Obviously, I'm sharing this with you guys because there are no secrets between us, right?" This is how ZZ Tells It often starts one of her videos. "What exactly is a ZZ Tells It?" May's mother asked her once. ZZ Tells It is a brightly lit blonde girl who sits on a sofa in her beach house and shares things. Advice, tips, stories from her own real life. She started as a model and fashion blogger, then she got into clean eating, and now she's also a mental health brand ambassador. And she talks about being bipolar, as well as her new range of vegan coconut wellness juices. "So, I'm gonna be real with you guys about the memory traces I personally have been experiencing lately," ZZ says. "The first one happened when I was arriving at this hotel, so just as I walked in, I, like, remembered this man's face, and I straight up don't know this guy. I was like, what the hell is happening right now?" A voice cuts in above ZZ's. "Several beers later," it says. It's coming from outside the headphones, from the other room. May's dad telling a story. May recognizes it as an old favorite, a misunderstanding in Thailand. His voice goes up as he gets towards the punchline. "It was a bloody woman after all." Laughter. May turns up the volume on the iPad. "So then the next week I'm going back to the same hotel," says ZZ. "And as I was leaving, walking through the foyer, I remembered the same face. Out of like nowhere. Let me tell you guys, it freaked me out." May takes her headphones out. She closes ZZ's window, opens Instagram and searches for hashtag memory trace. A few new stories pop up. Some nobodies, then an influencer May recognizes, who's posted a black and white bikini picture looking out over an infinity pool with a sad expression. "Wondering what I've lost," is the caption. May sighs. She opens Reddit, then closes it again. She spent 4 hours on Reddit last night, and then she couldn't sleep. She's starting to think maybe it's not good for her brain to absorb so much raw internet all at once. On top of whatever else is wrong with her brain. The first of May's own memory traces came to her a month ago when she was eating breakfast. 9 a.m., scrambled egg on toast. And the second arrived in the shower. 7 p.m., grapefruit and ginger shower gel. A week later. Since then, she's been eating the same breakfast and showering with the same products at the same times every day, but nothing else has come back. She looks out of the window that spans the north wall of her bedroom. The early evening Kuala Lumpur skyline is softened by a heat haze, a silver-grey humidity. Not that she can feel it in here, with the aircon on full blast. May's dad has adapted, he claims. It's a point of pride with him to have a tropically hot bedroom, as it is to barter down a rendang at the night market, demand the best view at his favourite whiskey lounge, to have mastered chopsticks, if not the language. May herself isn't sure if she made a mistake coming here, and she doesn't know how long she'll stay. So she moves from air-conditioned building to air-conditioned car to air-conditioned building, not adapting. Her phone buzzes. It's a message from Katya. "May?" says the little preview on the screen. "It's so weird to hear from you." May had half been expecting Katya not to reply. It's been nearly a year since May left uni, and they haven't been in contact since. If it hadn't been for the traces, May would never have texted her. And Katya, equally, has no reason to respond. Except, perhaps, to vent some anger. Even in the dry chill of the air conditioning, May feels an anticipatory sweat starting. She pulls her t-shirt away where it's clinging to her back. She opens the message.
"I have to be honest," Katya has written. "I was legit hurt the way you left things. I'm over it now, though. We're cool. I guess you had stuff to deal with, or whatevs."
Shrugging emoji.
"What did you want to ask me?"
"Huh," thinks May. "That wasn't so bad." She puts the phone in her bag, gets dressed, and goes out into the apartment. Her dad, his girlfriend Keiko, her dad's boss and his girlfriend, and another couple of people from her dad's office are in the sitting room on the long sofas in front of the long glass window drinking champagne. They'd concluded some sort of work deal today, May remembers. She wonders if she can sidle out without being spotted. Her dad is pretty drunk. His eyes look like small buttons in his tanned face. He's a handsome man, even so. That has to be the explanation for why Keiko puts up with him.
"Hi, May,"
Keiko says, seeing her. She slurs the words slightly. She's scared of heights, and she has to take a Valium before she can visit May's dad's apartment. May's dad?
"I always say, once you pass the 40th floor, there's no going back down again."
The pill obviously hasn't mixed well with the champagne.
"Hi, everyone,"
May says. They all turn towards her.
"I'm going out. Not sure when we'll be back. Bye, everyone."
"That's my daughter," her dad says proudly. "Party's like her old man. Have fun, darling."
May was startled when the first trace came to her. She was standing in the shower and there it was. A trace of a place. She'd rinsed herself off, got out, and written it down in her phone. A row of houses standing above a river. One is dark red, the next one is a burnt orange colour, another is pale brick red. They are all four or five stories, and all their window frames and gables are white. Each of them has a different roof line and its own quirky brickwork. The water of the river is busy all the time, and their reflections are just moving colours. Where is it? She thinks now. Not Kuala Lumpur, not London. And where am I? In the scene, she's a nothing, a set of eyes opposite these houses, floating, listening. And who is she with? Who is talking?
"Bold moves aren't such a big deal. Almost as soon as you've made one, it doesn't feel bold anymore."
She hears the man speak, but she doesn't recognize his voice. May takes a taxi to Chinatown, to a cafe off Jalan Petaling. She gets out next to a crumbling old colonial building with vines bursting out of the upper shutters. The humidity closes over her with finality. Walking a few metres down the crowded street, dodging a durian seller, a friendly woman with three small dogs, and a piece of plywood bridging a half-finished pavement, overwhelms her. She's relieved to walk into the cafe. The place has a familiar feel to it. Green plants, exposed brickwork, metal chairs. Admit it, she thinks. It's just like every independent London coffee shop. She doesn't go to the malls, brighter, cleaner, bigger, more luxurious than the ones back home. But she doesn't go to the night markets either. Not adapting, she thinks. Not to anywhere. She stands at the counter, breathes in, and there it is. The edge of the memory. Sometimes, like now, she can almost feel it in there. It's like a shiny, reflective presence sitting right in the middle of her brain. Like the creature in that old film, Predator. She can catch its movement sometimes, but when she moves in to investigate, she loses the sense of it. Maze googled the science behind memory traces. No way was she going to ask her parents, but there wasn't anything useful on the Nepenthe website. Of course there isn't. Nepenthe still tries to deny the existence of traces, even though nobody believes this. Even though there's a growing body of anecdotal evidence, as May's mum might put it, that traces are more common than Nepenthe would like to admit. Also, if the row of houses and the conversation aren't traces, then May is just going mad. She's almost sure she's not going mad. Admittedly, she came off her antidepressants recently without consulting her doctor, which even Google said was a difficult and dangerous thing to do. But also, the internet is full of people talking in forums about how to come off them in stages, gradually lowering the dose, which is what May did. And she's okay. She doesn't feel happier, exactly. She feels different. More alert to her own feelings, even though the feelings sometimes alarm her, the way they arrive out of nowhere, fright, shame, anger. It's like they've been queued up for months, long since the incidents they were originally attached to, just waiting for the neurochemical door to open. And with the feelings came the traces. The problem is that May can only remember those two traces. They repeat, but they don't develop into anything. She can't see anything around the houses, no wider view. She can't see anything around the words either. She has no idea what they could mean in relation to May herself. She's never made a bold move in her life. Even coming here to Kuala Lumpur wasn't bold in the end. She's just moved under a different wing. Without any way to recover more memory, Katya is May's main hope. The other day, one of May's apps suggested Katya to May as a friend, which is what always happens when you delete people. They get served up to you again and again. But before May dismissed the pop-up, she noticed that Katya's profile picture showed her beside their other friend, Sophia, and a shoulder that May is sure is her own, with a sunny park in the background. May has no memory of sitting in that park. She felt a chilly electricity run through her at the thought that this might be the same place as the one from the memory trace, followed by a more straightforward chill at the prospect of getting in touch with Katya, and, without getting into why May left uni and why May hasn't spoken to any of them for a year now, trying to find out where exactly that place was. May orders a flat white, sits down with it, and picks up her phone. WhatsApp shows Katya is online, her picture smiling up at May. May feels a sharp shove of dread. "Hey," she writes, "how are you?" "Lol," Katya replies. "Stressed out with finals," exploding head emoji. "Guess you wouldn't remember it's finals. You left all that behind," laughing emoji. It's hard to guess at her tone, or if the emoji is meant to be a gentle laugh or a nasty one. May might as well get to the point. It's not like she's going to convince Katya that she just wants to catch up. "I wanted to ask about your profile pic," she says. "Was I in it originally?" There's a long pause. The screen says, "Katya is typing." Then there's nothing. For so long, May wonders if she's gone. Then again, Katya is typing. "You're seriously getting back in touch after ghosting us for months to ask if I cropped you out of a freaking photo?"
?! Not really, May writes. I'm sorry. I know it sounds weird, but I think I maybe got a memory wipe. I think maybe I went somewhere with you, but I can only remember a couple of things about it. A string of shocked emojis, exclamation points, and question marks arrive. WTF? ? May sends a shrugging emoji. She's not sure what else to say. You're saying you don't remember Amsterdam? ? Amsterdam. But it makes sense. Amsterdam. Home of canals, tall houses, parks. Please tell me about it, May writes. I'm serious. I don't remember any of it. I must have got a wipe after I left uni.
Got kicked out, you mean?
Okay. Do you know why I'd have wiped that holiday?
This is so freaking weird. OMG. I can't believe you're asking me this. You were shady AF on that trip, though. You totally ditched us. Eye-rolling emoji. We went for a week and we saw you for 2 days of it. You vanished. I thought maybe you met a guy.
I didn't tell you who I met or where I went?
No. Like I said, you ditched us, shrugging emoji. BTW, I have to go out soon.
May doesn't know what to say.
Obviously, what May did, leaving uni before the end of the second year and ghosting all her friends, wasn't cool. But on the other hand, May was having a hard time at that point. And it's not like Katya and Sophia were going to get any Friend of the Year trophies either.
May's not coming out tonight, said Sophia to Katya.
May's like crying in her room or something, said Sophia to Katya. I'm kind of over May crying in her room. May needs to get her shit together.
The walls of their student flat were thin.
Okay, May writes now. Thanks for letting me know. Sorry about everything. Good luck with finals.
Okay, writes Katya. She sends an eye-roll emoji. Then a moment later, she appears to relent. Bye, May. Good luck with whatever you're doing. When May gets back, she runs into her dad and his colleagues coming out of the lift, talking loudly. The noise of them clatters all over the marble foyer.
May, says her dad. Back already? We're going out for more drinks. Come with us.
Sorry, May says. I'm really tired. Have fun, though.
Fine, her dad says. Hey, do me a favour and call your mother, would you? She called me earlier. She does that when you ignore her. She comes after me.
Okay, May says. Her dad turns to the others. He says,
My ex-wife is terrifying. Very probably a psychopath. That's the real reason I fled England.
They all laugh. It's funny, May thinks, how when she was living with her mum, she used to feel affectionately towards her dad, and now she's living with her dad, she started to feel more affectionately towards her mum.
I'm going now, May says. She moves in the direction of the lift.
Bye, darling, says her dad. And seriously, call your mum back, will you?
May sits on her bed, watching the sky darken, grey to blue to purple to black, and the towers of the city light up. She orders some sushi, then calls her mum, the idea being that after no more than 20 minutes, the sushi will arrive and she'll have to go.
Plum, says her mother when she picks up.
That's what May's name means. Beautiful and gracious,
says Google. Also, a tiny sweet fruit. She's not sure how you can be a gracious plum.
The name was presumably intended to honour her heritage while at the same time remaining easily digestible to Westerners.
Sorry I haven't called, May says.
I'm sorry for being a clichéd mother and worrying.
You're not a clichéd mother, May says.
She knows that's what her mother would like to hear.
Well, no, says her mum. But I'm not immune to concern. How are you? Is everything going well?
Uneventful, May says. I'm looking at universities online.
Yes, her mum says.
What sort of thing? Still philosophy? She says this carefully. May had originally been studying philosophy at Edinburgh. This had puzzled both her parents. When she started applying for courses, her mum said, "But Plum, I understand you enjoy it, but have you considered what you'll do with it? What are you going to do? Become a philosophy lecturer? You got top marks in core sciences. Think of the future potential there."
"I'd really like to be a philosophy lecturer, actually," said May.
"Oh," said her mother. "Well, a very rewarding profession. Obviously, I totally support your choice." Her dad was more direct. He said, "Teaching is for people who can't do anything else. But you can do something. You could go into politics. Better go into the city. Make some real money."
"Yep, still philosophy," May says to her mum now.
"Ah, I thought you might feel like starting afresh after your previous experiences."
"There wasn't anything wrong with the course," May says. "I loved my course. I failed because there was something wrong with me."
There's a silence. The silence is full of things that have been demonstrably wrong with May. Her earliest memories are of her own lazy eye, her habit of wetting the bed, her mum fixing her with corrective lenses, night alarms. Her mum put the incontinence down to the trauma of May spending her first 6 months of life in an orphanage in Guangzhou. But the orphanage is a long time ago now, and May's not sure she can blame it for her failing her course. The thought of the orphanage makes May feel weird. It always does. She can't put a name to the feeling beyond weird. It's another place she doesn't remember. She never will. And the idea of that makes her uneasy. Like waking up after a night of drinking and thinking, what happened? She focuses. It was a mistake to think about the orphanage when she's talking to her mum. May needs to stay composed and alert. She can't waver, or she might cry. "There's nothing at all wrong with you," her mother says. "You just needed more help than you were getting. It's not wrong to have areas of vulnerability or to struggle to cope. The next time you go into that situation, you'll have that support."
"More drugs," May says.
I can't tell over the phone if this is a dry humour thing or if this is something we seriously need to talk about, her mother says. May covers the handset. She sighs. Then she takes her hand away and says,
"It was humour."
"Good. Anyway, how are you for money? I put some into your account last week."
"Thank you," May says. "I'm not really spending it, though."
"You should. Enjoy yourself. Think of it as a summer off before you come back for university."
"Right," May says. She hasn't told her mum that she isn't sure yet if she does want to come back to England, that she's been looking at universities in Italy and Germany and France. She's not sure when to have that conversation. The thought of it makes her face feel hot
then abruptly cold as the beginning of sweat meets the powerful air conditioning. Not now, she thinks. It doesn't have to be now.
And everything's going well with your dad? Her mum asks. Her tone here is neutral. May's not going to say, actually, I thought moving here would make it easier to just be, but it turns out that while I don't feel exactly the same type of pressure I felt living with you, I still feel a pressure, and I still don't know how to be. How can she even describe that pressure anyway? Her mother would say she just wants May to be supported. Her dad would say he just wants May to have fun. May can't articulate what her actual problem is with either of those wishes. It's fine, May says. Well, good, her mum says. I imagine he's still telling people I'm a psychopath. Not every day. Her mum laughs. Obviously, I think your father is a flashy, irresponsible egotist, she says. But he does adore you. I respect that. And so I hope you don't feel like there's any issue of loyalty here, of omerta. You can tell me if things aren't going well, you know. And it's okay if you do want to come home. When May's mum says this, tears rise up in May's eyes and her throat. She's annoyed at the tears for falling so quickly into line. She swallows them back. I'm having fun here, she says. I'm happy. Well, I'm glad to hear it. No other news? May looks at her laptop screen, which is open on a website that scans the internet for the cheapest flights, in this case to Amsterdam. Nope, she says. Nothing I can think of. May's read a lot now about memory wipes. She would have been a night client, collected in a black car, in darkness, driven to the clinic nearest her house, Crow's Hill. There, around midnight, she'd have had the procedure, which isn't done by lasers like everyone assumes, but by a little capsule, a plastic cup of water, and a mild electrical current. Afterwards, May would have been given another drug to stop new memories from forming so that she'd forget she'd been to Crow's Hill. Then she'd have been put into another black car and driven back to bed, everything that happened that night vanishing behind her, as if someone was following her with a little broom, rubbing out her footsteps. Back at home, she'd have taken the last pill, one to put her into a sleep lasting for 1,000 years. Or 10 seconds. In the morning, she wouldn't be able to say. She'd be calm, groggy, none the wiser. May's heard that traces can come back in dreams, but she's never dreamt about Amsterdam or the conversation she must have had there. And yet, there's a dreamlike sense to the traces, the way she's present but not present, watching, bodiless, the light that flickers on the surface of the river, the tall houses, the man saying, bold moves aren't such a big deal. How can you have nostalgia for somewhere you don't remember being? How can you long in a painful way for something you don't even know? But she longs all the same. It turns out that May's mum has put enough money in May's bank account to cover the flights and a few nights in a small hotel near the Blumenmarkt. She thinks she can probably get some more cash from her dad before she goes. May feels bad about lying to her parents. After the failed year at university, she'd agreed with her mother that she would be honest and open about her feelings, but she's already failed at that, by not telling her mum she stopped taking her pills. And anyway, what else can she do? It's almost certain that her mum, and maybe her dad too, knows
May had a memory removed, in which case they would definitely not want May to rush off to Amsterdam to try to get it back. To them, this would look inconsistent and unstable and would remind them of other times May has been inconsistent and unstable. They'd worry and they'd stop her going. She clicks continue, purchase, agree, confirm. When everything is settled and paid for, she feels a sharp rise of emotion. It's not easy yet to tell, since coming out of the muffling blanket of antidepressants, what these kinds of sudden, piercing emotions are, where they're coming from. It takes her a minute to recognize a feeling she once had all the time. Fear. But there's also relief. And excitement? Excitement! It's been a while since she felt that one. Her phone chimes and lights up like a dog picking up the mood. You are going on holiday! Here's everything you need to know for your flight on 26 May. May. May, she thinks. It's her month, after all. May Day. Isn't that what people say when they're in trouble? Not May Day, but May Day. Help me. May's helping herself. Maybe this is it, she thinks. A bold move. At last. She lies back on the bed, the phone resting on her heart, and laughs.